The ship hung in the sky like a crime. Beneath it on the beach, Walt was a speck, a bacterium. The vessel edged forward, a thick disk hundreds of yards across, so huge and black it looked less like a physical object and more like a hole in the sky, a portal to another world, to hell, to madness. The last 6 years, he dreamt them, hadn't he? He hadn't really blown up the ship, nor had he lived in the Yucatan like a hermit god, perched atop Chichen Itza until he'd been summoned back to L.A. to kill even more aliens, and then later to be dragged into a civil war for the soul of the city. He'd been knocked out years ago, hadn't he? Back with Otto and Mia and Raymond, when the alien jet had bombed them. Everything since then had been an overheated fever dream. With a cavernous hum, the ship inched closer, hovering a mile above Santa Monica Bay. And beneath it, the ruins of the first ship lay in the blue-gray waves, which meant the second ship was just as real. His legs almost went out from underneath him, the unfairness of it. Back then, the first time, the aliens had been weakened by fighting, by having spread themselves across the world. Even then, he and Otto had barely pulled it off. It had been 1,000-to-1 shot. If there was any justice in the universe, that would have been the end of it. Once upon a time, civilization had manufactured justice, cranking out its best approximation of right and wrong. But the world had changed, and he had too. The only justice these days was what you made for yourself. These days, like always, unfairness no longer made him want to give up. It pissed him off. He stuck his middle finger up at the mile-wide ship. Then he turned and ran toward the $5 million Manhattan beach house where Carrie lay dreaming, unaware that the world had changed yet again. On the deck of the alien submarine, Ness held tight to Tristan's arm, gaze locked on the ship. He'd never seen one of the big mothers up in the sky before. During the initial invasion, he'd been holed up in the mountains of the Idaho Panhandle. Later, he'd been a slave in a nuclear plant in eastern Washington. By the time he'd extricated himself from that human sewer, the mothership had already been knocked down. Seeing it now, he was about ready to shit his pants. But that wasn't why he was staring. He stared because the ship, the size of a town, held up in the air like that's what air was there to do, was incredible. His voice felt like it was coming from a different person.
You gotta be kidding me.
I wish.
Sprite moved to the edge of the deck, peg leg clonking.
What do you think it's doing here?
Sam sighted in on it through the scope of her rifle.
Don't see any jets. No troop carriers. Right now I'd say they're risk assessing.
Tristan folded her arms.
There's only one reason for them to come back.
Gentrification?
She jerked her chin at the ruins of Los Angeles miles to their left.
They sure didn't fly all this way for the scenery.
Ness didn't want that to be true. Most of the swimmers were real sons of bitches, but the only aliens they'd known had been the ones who'd traveled to Earth with the express purpose of burning the place down. So there was some selection bias going on there. Even so, one of those murderous space monsters had turned out to be Sebastian, who was standing with them at that very moment, his bulbous eyes fixed upwards. Reading the alien's chitinous, rubbery face wasn't easy, but they'd known each other for 5+ years. They'd traveled the world together, fought together. First the humans, those abusing and preying on their fellow survivors, and then the leftover swimmers who were still waging war on the planet. In that time, Ness had come to learn a few things about alien expressions. And to the great pain of Ness's hopes that Tristan was wrong, Sebastian looked like he'd just stumbled into a mass grave.
"Say you're right," Ness said. "Say they are here to wipe us out for good. What do you suggest we do about it?"
"The same thing we've been doing for the last 2 years,"
Tristan smiled grimly.
"Go kick some alien ass."
In the foothills above Pasadena, Lowell stood stock still, binoculars pressed to his eyes. His face was as motionless as the empty cities beneath him. His heart, though, phew, it was racing like a thoroughbred. He knew what he had to do, but his feet weren't moving. He was locking up, staring at a nightmare as if his wish it wasn't real would make it disappear. He'd seen it in plenty of others. He had a term for those people. Corpses. When others locked up, though, it was out of fear. That wasn't what had him, was it? He was taken by something else. Exhaustion. He was tired of fighting. For years he'd swallowed Anson's promises of peace and unification, working behind the scenes to make that dream real. Scouting, strong-arming, murdering, all the dirty work needed to clean out the city. And all of it lies. In the end, the only thing Lowell had done to redeem himself was to cut off Anson's head. The ship hung over the bay like a mile-wide gun barrel. If Lowell had been on his own, he might have sat down and let the future come to him. He wasn't alone, though. And before he could retire, he had one last thing to do. He turned from the bay and ran through the woods, ears sharp for the whine of alien jets. Within minutes, he was at the cabin. The front yard was empty. He threw open the front door.
Randy!
Lowell moved to the front closet and grabbed the two bags stashed there. Bulging and heavy, but not too heavy, they contained several days of food and water, and everything they'd need to last long enough to find more.
Randy!
The boy wasn't in his room, nor the den. Lowell swung open the back door. Across the overgrown yard, Randy drove a shovel into the rich soil of the garden.
Randy!
Lowell jogged toward him.
Your ear's working?
I was just finishing up. The teen blinked from behind his glasses. His pudgy face was sweaty, dirt-streaked. His eyes moved to the two packs on Lowell's shoulder.
What's the matter?
The aliens. They're back.
When did they ever leave?
There's a second ship, every bit as big as the first one. And this one's still airborne.
Randy paled, then screwed up his face and strode toward Lowell, reaching for his go-bag.
Where are we going? The Dune Market?
Lowell passed the boy the smaller pack.
Colorado.
Is that where the others are headed?
Doubt it.
Randy held the bag before him, not yet shouldering it.
You want to run away?
I want to survive.
But the city's just been brought together. How can we run away from that?
Temper flaring, Lowell stopped himself from grabbing the boy's arm.
You want to fight?
Randy's mouth fell open.
I can't believe you don't!
Fighting to unify the city was one thing. That fight was winnable. But this is a flying city, a fleet of jets, and a new army. We can't stand against that.
But our friends are down there. How can we leave them behind?
They'll leave too.
Lowell held Randy's gaze.
Because anyone who stays and fights is dead.
Randy hesitated, emotions grappling for his face. His expression calmed. He shouldered the pack.
Then let's move.